Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Episode 197 of the show, The Tech Guy. Myself, I'm on vacation this week. I'm out visiting Drake in Arizona, but I put together a compilation of the best Washed Up Walk-Ons moments from the first 200 episodes voted on by you guys. Okay, this is a great episode. Had a lot of fun putting it together. So sit back, relax. Let's have a day, baby. Let's go. All right, just like I said, you're not going to hear Drake or Kevin on today's episode. I'm going to be doing little intros of each clip. There's about, 9 or 10 clips here. Some of the best moments that were consistently brought out when I asked on Twitter, what are your favorite moments from the first 200 episodes? Some of these were really funny. I forgot that some of these even happened. I went all the way back to the first episodes, the cringiest episodes from 2018 when we started podcasting. The sound quality is going to vary here because over time you've got a lot of bunch of different microphones. That was a good verbiage. 200 episodes in, I'm still can't talk. A lot of different microphones that I've used, Drake's used. You know, we're still working on that, obviously. This first clip, we're going to start out with going way back to 2018 when we were just getting started. Kevin and Drake. Some of our best stuff was just them shitting all over teams from border states and their schools. And so you're going to hear some Nebraska talk, some Fitzgerald talk, and Kevin and Drake are always a good time. You guys know that. Here is some clips from that.
Oh, nice. Man. I had written it off when they were up whatever it was, 14 or 17. I just hadn't gone back to that game anymore because I was like, I don't want to watch these assholes win. Like, if I'm going to watch Nebraska football play, it's going to watch them suffer and like watch them just create a bigger hole of heaping pile of shit that they are. And so I just kind of wrote it off and I'm like, wow, great. They got one, whatever. And then to actually hear that they got beat in a comeback like that, it just like – That makes my whole year. Like, I'm so thrilled because all those people thought that they were like actually going to be a team. You know, their players are now tweeting, it's not going to matter when we win the Big Ten championship or whatever. Like, Sukala Mink, you guys are trash. You guys are a fucking mid-major Division One team. And I mean, you guys are just going to get fucking rolled the whole season just because that's what you are. You're a bunch of worthless pile of shit. This guy is just kind of a personification of the entire state of Nebraska, just like ridiculously stupid. They're just like all dipshits. They just don't have any clarity on like what this world actually is.
They're all living in La La Land.
Seriously, they must be.
That's the only reason I really hate Nebraska is because they literally, they just live in a fantasy of them still being a nationally potent team.
Yeah, relevant.
And it's just not the fact anymore, you know? Like, there's a lot of other teams I hate in the Big Ten, but at least their fan bases aren't so naive and, you know, have their heads so far up their asses that you just hear the entire state jawing all year long when they've gone 4-8 the past two seasons.
Yeah, it's not 1999 anymore.
I hate it because it gives like Nebraska like relevance. I don't know why they would do that, but I think I don't know what the worst blowouts on game day have ever been at game day sites. This could top it. This might be the new record.
So let me try and gather all my thoughts here for the people because I know that they need something in their day. They got that AB little bit. So I
right. Well, 30-40% of the questions I asked for ended up just being let Drake rant on Nebraska for 10 minutes. So So gather your thoughts here.
Oh, here's my idea: is that it is a stretch. Like it really must mean that they have to fill a College Game Day show, and this is one of the times where they would have taken it to North Dakota State, but nobody. They must not be playing anybody good either. You know what I'm saying? Like they'll go test the water somewhere rather than literally taking the set to watch somebody get their asshole pushed in. So that's pretty much my prediction for the game. But the funny thing about it is that Nebraska has to take their ego, similar to AB, and their fake sellout record, and they have to stuff that stadium full of 90,000 people just to keep that bullshit going, to watch their team walk into an absolute slaughter. Like it's a lamb to a slaughter because this Ohio State team is kicking on all cylinders and Nebraska looks like a MAC team. They look like they should probably be playing Northern Illinois every week. It seems like a more favorable matchup for them. I don't know. I'm really excited to watch it. It's on my queue for things that I need to watch. Fans, no profanity really in this.
I was gonna say it's not even like a time to shit talk.
No, it's almost not. Like I'm honestly mourning the fact. Well, not really mourning it, but like I'm giving them a little bit of respect, little subdued attitude to the fact that they are walking into their own murder.
I blame myself for ever trusting them to do anything worth a damn in that school's entire existence. And
are they dead to you forever now? Like, is Iowa State just dead forever on the line no matter what?
No, absolutely no matter fucking what. I hold grudges when it comes to betting, and Iowa State will absolutely never get my money on them ever again. I don't care if they're getting 70 points and all they have to do is lose by 69. I'm not putting my money on them. Ever again. Fuck State. Fuck State. Fuck State.
Not nearly.
Yeah, man. We'll see if we can't get the parlay train back and rolling. I'll try not to pick any teams like that fuck stick team out in Ames.
and you're probably going to want to try and stay away from the team out west of State, huh?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, talk. I completely forgot that game. Yeah.
We should probably touch on that real quick.
Let's touch on that. First off, I mean, thank you to Nebraska for having such a soft fucking team. I mean, y'all made me a lot of money on that game. I appreciate it. Granted, I gave it right back, but it was fun to have for a little bit. I think you guys talked about it. I loved that game, Ohio State minus 17. Ohio State had been rolling over everyone all year. Nebraska, like, tried to lose to Illinois, lost, like, gave up a game to Colorado. Like, they just don't look like a good football team right now. And, nope. Jerick, I'm just gonna leave it to you to put them in the dirt right now.
You know, I put on Twitter that they honestly deserve a moment of respect because, like, even when your worst enemy dies, you still got to take a moment to just be like, okay, you know, rest in peace. You're gone now, scum. And that's just kind of what the Nebraska program is. Like, they still had that little glimmer of hope that they were actually worth a shit. And even though they were just squeaking by people, they just thought that, like, oh, it's okay. We're still good to go. And I think they just got proven that they are, like, so, so far from ever being elite again. Like, their players are quitters. The only good thing that I saw out of that game was that Scott Frost brought back the 1990 like I formation QB options. That was kind of cool to see. But aside from that, that team is one of the worst football teams that I could have ever imagined coming from that school. Like from somebody from a place that thinks that they're so high and mighty. Like what does being down 49-0 at home feel like? Like that is actually like genitalia in mouth gagging.
Okay, let's take it easy.
I don't know, man.
Let's take it easy with
what
the
suffocating feel like.
What I'm not gonna digress on is the fact that Northwestern's offense looks worse than Pat Fitzgerald's man tits. That's one of the worst football teams I've ever seen. I'm glad that one's behind us. We had to go into a shitty environment, shitty locker room, smells like buttholes, and come out of there with a win, but that's good. And we got the job done, so let's talk about it. And here we go.
That was obviously Drake and Kevin. Just sometimes they get a little torn up about some topics, and it's fun to hear that happen. Our next clip is from Josie Jewell. One of our first guest episodes that we ever had before we really knew what we were doing with guests, we brought Josie on in his first offseason with the NFL, and it provided one of the most random stories that's been told on the podcast, and I think it's mostly just entertaining because it's funny to hear Josie talk. You think of him as this big middle linebacker, the outlaw, and then he tells a story like this, and you just start to wonder. Here's Josie.
I'll tell you the story, okay? So I haven't been back to my – I told Kevin this before we even started recording. But I haven't been back to the house. You know, I've been in camp for the last, what, five days or so like that, whatever it is. And, you know, I came back the first 2 days, and then I haven't come back since the last three. Anyway, I got back today, and I drove by a couple of my neighbors' houses, and I haven't met all of them yet, but I see this guy just standing on one of their lawns, and I wave at him thinking it's one of my neighbors I haven't met yet. And I keep on going. He waves back, and I get in my garage, and I'm taking pictures of all the hail and stuff like that and just kind of chilling. And all of a sudden he comes up to me and starts talking, and somehow he's one of the roofing people's company. And you know, he does a bunch of that, and he wanted to take a look at my roof. And I was like, okay, since he's my neighbor, maybe I'll do that. And long story short, anyway, he came around the house, and I soon to find out he's not even my neighbor, and he's just a guy walking around trying to, you know, have people spend some cash on him. Anyway, he leaves, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm having a good time. You know, I have to go to the bathroom on my phone, and all of a sudden I get a knock on my door, like really four hard fist pounds on my door, and mid poop, you know, how are you supposed to come up with this stuff? And I have to take a two wiper. And I finally had to go, and I was already pissed off when I started to talk to this guy and had to open the door, because the two wiper, that's, you don't want any of that.
You just gotta take a shower after that.
No, I mean, yeah. I'm sitting in my own shit right now. I mean, come on. At least I don't have an ass like Bo. I mean, if I had an ass like Bo, I might. I mean, you just,
yeah, you'd be,
I think,
fucked.
I think that would have completely you're wiping it into all the other hair particles. So,
oh god,
you know that dude is definitely stank.
Well, I hope Bo listens to this. Go on. So you answer the door.
No, he's a cleanly dude. No, I was just going to tell you, I was pissed off with the dude at the door. Like, oh, okay. And he was another dude that wanted to do roofing. And I'm like, all right, I already got another guy that came by, and this dude was talking faster than I've ever heard a person talk before. And I'm just like, I appreciate it. I'll call you. And then I just kind of shut the door and said bye-bye.
The old Josie two wipe. Just a story that I had forgotten about completely on this podcast, and then somebody on Twitter, obviously this is why I asked the question, brings it up, and it creates an incredible moment on the show. Josie rarely shares stuff like that with anybody, and decided to open up on the podcast, so we're looking forward to having him on again soon. Here is clip number three, and this is one of the more emotional pieces that we've had on the podcast. This was during the 2019 season. People were really starting to get down on Nate Stanley, Coach Ferentz, the Hawks in general, and Kevin got extremely, extremely upset with some of the things that he had been hearing, some of the things that he had been seeing, and this was his response to some of the haters.
Hey And that's what's frustrating. As you know, we're fans too now. We're not players anymore. We're fans. And it's frustrating for us. It was frustrating watching that game. You know, when it was 21-6 going in the fourth quarter, I'm like, you know, tomorrow when we record this podcast, I'm not really gonna have too many positive things to say. And then they go off and, you know, the offense finds some life. Nate Stanley starts playing like a like an absolute savage. We, you know, we claw back into that game. And I'm like, okay, you know, these boys, they have some fight in them. They have some fight in them. That is a positive thing I can say. They didn't quit. They, you know, they're down 21-6 in a hostile environment in Camp Randall. Like, a lot of teams can roll over there. And then, you know, especially against a team that's running the ball, and just, you know, a lot of teams can roll over there and just roll over and die and head back to where the fuck they came from. And, you know, but, you know, they came out, they kept fighting. The effort's there. The execution is not. Somebody's got to come up with the big plays. We're not coming up with the big plays. If we want to look at a closer look at the actual game, this one's not on Nate Stanley. It's not on Brian Ferentz. It's not on the offense. If you told me as a defensive player that we're going to get 22 points against the Wisconsin Badgers, one of the best defenses in the country, I'm like, that's enough. We'll do our job. That's my mindset as a defensive player. You give me 22 points, that is more than enough. We're good. We got it from here. That is my mindset. That was Josie Jewell's mindset. That was Nate Budgett's mindset. That was Jordan Lomax's mindset. That was all the great defensive players throughout our time at Iowa football's mindset. 22 points, more enough. We got this, boys. Defense didn't get done yesterday. Not on the offense. It's on the defense. Phil Parker will tell you that. Seth Wallace will tell you that. KB will tell you that. Anyone on that defense will tell you that. That's on us.
Kev, that got my heart rate up a lot, boys.
I think I'm going to cry.
That's on us, man. You know, Wisconsin ran the ball for 300 yards. We, you know, I
was ready to run through my TV to get off a fucking block. Man,
dude. We had D linemen out of gaps. We started bringing some pressure, so when we had to start stunting our D linemen, we didn't get in gaps. Boom, there's 12 yards right there. Our linebackers struggled to get off blocks versus their massive offensive line, which is a good offensive line. Always has been.
One of the best.
At one point, you gotta sack up, get off a block, and make a play. When we do make contact with Taylor, he drags us for another 3 yards. Coach Doyle said every time we played this fucking team, the more physical team would win. Wisconsin was the more physical team yesterday.
Which is heartbreaking to say, because that's what we pride ourselves on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think I said on Thursday, turnovers would be huge. Time of possession would be huge. We won the turnover battle 2-1. But that one that we gave up, you know, that killed a lot of momentum. I think it was like 7-6 the time when we had the fumble snap. But time of possession, I think they had that ball for 38 minutes. Defense couldn't get off the field at times. And it's hard to win when the offense only has the ball for a third of the game. Hard to win when your defense is on the field for 40 minutes.
It's hard to score points, man. You only get the ball 20 minutes. You don't have that much time, or you don't have that many possessions to work with.
100%, man. So I tell you, if there's one thing that the football program, the Iowa football program about, is good at, it's owning your mistakes. The defense is going to meet today, and they're going to close off the half of the team room. You know, Brian's going to start talking his thing. Phil's going to be quiet for about 4 minutes. Be like, boys, we didn't get the job done. We didn't get the job done. They're going to go over our goals, you know, yards per rush, passes per yards per pass attempt, turnovers, points. And he's going to be like, you know what? We got some of our goals, but we didn't get the most important one. We didn't get the win. So none of it even fucking matters. They're going to go off in their individual meetings. You know, And each one of them in each of their position groups are going to take 30 seconds to a minute to reflect with their position groups. Like, we didn't get done. What can we do better? The coaches ask the players, what can I do better to help make you better? The players should ask the coaches after meetings, what do I need to get better at? Help me. Help me be the best player I can be. Help me be the best coach I can be.
I definitely agree with what Kevin's saying, man, because self-reflection goes a long way. You can try and make excuses, or you can just look yourself directly in the mirror and say, like, I wasn't good enough and I will be better. And if every player in that building does that, and the coaches as well, and they just keep attacking the season with everything they have, there's a lot of upside left in this season and in this team, because they show that they have it in them.
They absolutely do. And you talk about self-reflection, man. 2017, I couldn't sleep nights after losses. Couldn't fucking sleep. You know why? It's because I was a captain of that fucking team. And it's on me first. It's on me to make sure the guys are ready. It's on me to make sure that special teams unit is perfect every fucking kick. Whenever there is something that went wrong, I owned it. That's my fault. I should have helped him out. He's a freshman. He doesn't fucking know. That's on me. You know, and I just hope the boys that they take this and they go.
I hope they listen to this.
They go out and they take this hurt, because it fucking hurts. Every fucking loss hurts. You think your tweets hurt them? They don't give a fuck about your tweets. They don't give a fuck about your tweets. They don't give a fuck what you say about Coach Ferentz. They don't give a fuck what you say about Brian. They don't give a fuck what you say about Nate. They don't give a fuck about any of you. They love you for your support. That we love when you come out to games. We love that you support us. But we don't give a shit what you guys say on Twitter, because we only care about the 105 guys in the locker room and the 20 coaches. That's it. That's all that matters. You think KF cares what you think that we should fire him? He gets offers from the NFL every fucking year. He doesn't need Iowa. Iowa needs KF.
Iowa needs KF.
So these boys, you know, we can still win 10 games this year. I think we should win 10 games this year. We have a hot team coming from Minneapolis, and they want the fucking pig. The pig's been in our building since 2015. You know, if these guys really have some balls, we're going to find out this week. We're going to find out this week. That's my monologue.
Chills run through my body every time I hear Kevin go on that rant. I had done a little bit of monologue just before that, and if you want, that's episode 63 of the Washed Up Walk-Ons, one of the more memorable. And we took a lot of heat for that episode. Kevin, you know, a lot of the people on Twitter, some of those people that Kevin was talking about, they loved to point to that episode early on, too, and we were, you know, we were, call us homers or whatever. I mean, we played for the program. They always like to point to that episode and say, oh, they can't find anything wrong with KF or anything wrong with the coaches or whatever. They're never going to admit that something's wrong because they're too close to the program. And it's just not true. If you go through, I mean, shoot, go back to those the first two episodes of 2020 season. We were unsure if the program was under control and who was running that place. And we thought it was going to be a dumpster fire, and they turned it around. And so that was one of the more emotional moments that we've seen on the podcast. Hasn't gotten quite that emotional in a long time, but I think it's good to go back and listen to that every once in a while. This next clip comes from, again, kind of once we found our stride and figured out what our guest episodes wanted to look like. We had my good buddy Miguel Racinos on, former Iowa kicker, and he told a story, and I'm sure you already know where we're going with this, that just, it stuck in the minds of everybody. We posted the clip on Twitter. It ended up getting like 50,000 views, and kind of blew up. And this kind of shows a different side of what a big time football game looks like.
And I remember going into there and I knew what I wanted to do. Like, I felt good about the kick and everything, but I went out there and I just fucking had a technical mistake, which hadn't happened to me like all year. And I just remember thinking, like, just being so fucking mad. Like, I was on the sideline and like people were saying shit to me and I don't even really remember them scoring or getting the 2 point or anyone talking to me or anything like that. I don't remember any of that. Because I was literally pacing up and down the sidelines. I'm like, if I don't start pacing, I'm going to like throw my helmet into the stands. Like, I was so mad that it was like, you know exactly what I'm talking about, Drake. The red haze just starts to slip over. And like,
I've been so mad before. Yes. That the head coach had to pull me off somebody on the sideline. So yes, I do understand what you're speaking of.
And like, there were coaches and players that were trying to talk to me and I was literally like, get the fuck out of my way kind of thing. And I was just pacing up and down the sideline. And I distinctly remember, like, you know, I said this in the press conference, and I think people were just kind of like, thought I was bullshitting or something like that. But I really had this like premonition where it's like, they're going to score and get the 2 point. I'm going to get another shot here. And I'm like, I'm not going to fuck this one up kind of thing.
That's great.
And I really believe that. Like, I didn't even watch the game because it really felt like I knew what was going to happen. So I literally have no memory from that 37 yarder to the 41 yarder, except for just me trying to keep myself calm. And
what a mental battle that was, I bet.
I'll tell you what, man, that plays strongly into all the stories we've told about how the times where we didn't know if we were going to make it through shit and how ridiculously hard it was. Like, it hardens your mentality
to the
point where you do believe that you're going to be able to get it done. It takes the anxiety away and you have a true belief in yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go.
That's not entirely true. I do have one memory I think you guys will appreciate. I've said this to a few people, but as I was pacing down, I distinctly remember all of a sudden I remember like, holy shit, I have to take a piss like right now. Like, right now I have to take a piss. And I looked over, and this is, like, the play right before Nate's pass to TJ to get us in range.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I'm going to have to kick, possibly have to kick here in a few seconds. I'm not about to miss an opportunity for a game-winning field goal because I'm going to go take a piss. I will tell you right now, talking yourself into pissing your pants is, like, one of the hardest.
General managers ask questions to find the right players. Like, do they have ice in their veins? When you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to make sure you find the right candidates with the skills you need. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. And with Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with skills you need. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
Things I've ever had to do. Like, genuinely one of the hardest things. And, like, the best part is people are trying to talk to me, and I'm like, don't fucking talk to me. I'm, like, trying to look up in the air and not look at anyone in the face to, like, do this. And it was pouring rain, so no one fucking knew, you know? And it, like, that was a little funny, but at the time I was so mad I didn't even think about it. I was just like trying to get myself to do it. And then, like, pretty much after I finally got myself to do it, then I had to run on there and go kick the
So you're telling me right now on the Wash Up Walk-Ons that before Miguel Racinos hit a game winner to send Nebraska home, he pissed his pants on the sideline?
Absolutely.
That's incredible.
So
anybody but Miguel. I mean, that's just Miguel Racinos in a nutshell. And I'm so glad that I know that kid. He's one of the, you know, we talk about it all the time. He's one of the smartest guys ever. He was a really good kicker, really deserved a shot at the NFL. He's now in med school. I mean, he's going to literally go and cure cancer someday. And I think everybody was pretty happy to have Miguel Racinos on the football team for the Iowa Hawkeyes. Our next clip comes from episode 88, the double eights, the snowmen, as they're called on the poker table. And you could argue that this clip features a couple snowmen, a couple big old hardy guys from Iowa, the Twins, the Paulsons. They gave us over 90 minutes, almost 2 hours of pure gold content. I really recommend just going back and listening to that episode in its entirety by itself. It'll bring you joy like no other. But this clip was one of the favorites. They told their story of senior day, walking out onto the field together, something that was really cool to watch, and a little story about Tristan Wirfs and how they foretold his leaving early of the university on that day.
Absolutely. So first thing I'm going to say is our senior day when we walked out, you know, I knew it was going to be a tough day, and I listened to your guys, well, just on the way home. We came back from Mobile today to Iowa City, and I listened to the Tristan Wirfs podcast, and he said, you know, I didn't know it, you know, throughout the season if I was going to, you know, come back, or, you know, maybe I didn't try to think about it. But our senior day, I knew that he wasn't coming back because we ran out to our parents together, you know, and it was a super rewarding experience, you know, and I saw my dad about break down in tears. I've never seen my dad cry. But he didn't end up crying, but I walk off the sideline, and I'm telling you, Tristan Wirfs, you know, he wore the black eye black, and the eye black was all over his chin, all over his chin. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, I'm going to miss you guys, and blah, 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 when in reality, you know, I think it was,
he's
not going to be able to experience it, you know, he's going to experience a totally different, you know, walking across the stage right. Way, and, so I'm like, you got to get together. You got to play a game, man. And he was he balled the whole time through the national anthem. You know, now Kinnick's
captains
through the captains, and he's bawling.
This boys, is the offensive lineman of the year.
Boys, I'm emotional right now sitting through that interview with Tristan, listening to him talk about it, and now hearing you guys see the emotion. I might have to step out for a second. I mean, this is messing me up. This podcast is some shit.
I mean, the senior day deal was hard, and it was like hard just to think about, you know, this is my last time coming to Kinnick Stadium. This is my last time touching the Niall Kinnick helmet. This is my last time walking down these stairs. This is my last time walking out. You know, that's what's
it's hard.
It starts to get into the little things like, oh, this is the last time I'll walk through this door.
This is the last time I have there's an ice cream, you know?
Oh, man.
Anyways, dude, that last burger at that place, man. I always, you know, it's not the best burger ever, but what it means.
Oh, absolutely. And
I think that last snack, me, Josie, Bo, and Ben, we were down there for like a solid like hour and a half at snack. We were like the last ones there. It's like, man,
gotta enjoy it.
This is it. Yeah.
The senior day is a huge part of the Iowa program or any program or any athlete that has their career come to a close. And everybody has a similar story where it gets very emotional. Time starts to slow down a little bit and you start to realize, wow, this is really it. And listening to the Paulsons tell that story and then Kevin talking about snack afterwards, it really brought back the memories. It brings it back every time. You can almost feel when you were in that moment. And it makes you cherish the time you had in the program just that much more. On a much lighter note, and this is maybe one of the all-time clips of the podcast in general for anyone, our friend, we'll say it loosely, friend Jake Gervais, who now is bouncing around the NFL, he's stuck with the Rams for a few years, was telling his story about how he was recruited to the University of Iowa and really how it came to be over other schools. And, well, you just kind of have to listen for yourself.
I had one offer from Air Force, and they called me like, yeah, we're going to offer you. I'm like, all right, this is sick. I'm going to go out there on Monday.
Dude, this is literally like my fucking recruiting trail. Like, you know, like you just follow me around the map. You just want to beat me so badly, don't you?
I mean, I'm doing all right.
Kevin has told the story of how Air Force was his only other offer, and he was 100% in that he was gonna go drop freedom bombs on the ISIS regime.
Well, Kevin would have fit in very well at Air Force, but I didn't get the opportunity because they did a medical background.
Did they go a different route?
Yeah, it went a different route because I found out that you're a
pussy.
No, it was nothing about that. It was they found out I had food allergies. So I get a call and they're like, yeah, we got to pull your scholarship. So
you got your
like allergic water to peanuts or something?
What does he have food allergies?
I'm allergic to onions, so they pulled my scholarship.
What?
Ended up walking on at the University of Iowa, and it was the best decision of my life.
That's maybe
isn't that bullshit though?
That's maybe the best story that's ever been told.
And onions, the most random thing ever. I never knew you were allergic to onions.
I didn't either.
So trash. They just pulled it. Like, I was supposed to go on an official on a Monday, and they called me on Sunday. Like, yeah, like we can't have you out of here because you can't clear our medical stuff, so you're done.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, so rattled.
So you called, guys. I'm fucking rattled. Right. I'm rattled right now. So literally at this point, you're like, fuck, I only can walk on at Iowa. I hope this one works out.
Yeah. And the only reason that happened was because Coach Morgan, as you all know, one of the most legendary coaches at Iowa, he coached my high school coach when my high school coach was in high school. So he coached him in high school. So that was the reason I even got a walk on was because they had that connection. And Coach Morgan came to my high school a couple of times and probably saw me beat up on Drake's ass once or twice. And then they offered me for a walk on.
Well, there you go.
And I had no other option. So I said, all right, I'm going to go to Iowa.
No other options is a common theme sometimes in the Iowa Hawkeye walk on story, and oftentimes it ends up being the best option that they landed in Iowa City. I know it was my best option. Drake, Kevin would echo the same thing, and obviously Gervas, but onions, man, onions. It wasn't peanuts, it wasn't shellfish, it was onions. A food allergy kept Gervas out of the Air Force and brought him to Iowa City. Such an incredible story. This next one comes from maybe one of the more polished episodes we've ever done. Episode number 100, the halfway mark of really where we're at in the podcast journey right now, coming up on 200, we had Chad Greenway on, obvious Hawkeye legend and all-time Hawkeye in general, long career with the Minnesota Vikings, and we had him on to talk about a ton of things, like the Paulson episode. I recommend listening to this one in its entirety again and again. It's really incredible, and Greenway is pure entertainment. He talks about Kevin asked him a question late in the episode, kind of to end the episode, and it was reaching back to a time where he had come in and talked to the team while we were on the squad, and we were up in Minnesota playing the Gophers. Greenway made an appearance, and it really made an impression on Kevin in the linebacker room, and Greenway provided a lot of really great insight. So listen to Chad talk about that right now.
So at my junior year, I'm like, I'm dubbing VHS tapes during my study hall, literally, like, you know, old school. You guys are probably too young to even do that. Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, it was before CDs. We're dubbing VHSs. I'm making these highlight tapes and send them off to all these colleges. I remember I sent them all over. And my high school coach was like as throwbacks it gets, you know, double lipper all the time. I mean, probably. And great dude. I mean, a phenomenal football coach and a great guy. But he just didn't have the wherewithal of how to help me get recruited. So I sent videos everywhere. Got a little bit of a few nibbles here and there. And then between my junior and senior year, I went to a camp out in Colorado. Really the first time I'd ever gone do anything like that. I got invited to what's called a Nike Combine, or at the time it was. Yeah, remember, this is 2000, man. I mean, this is a long time ago.
Yeah, we were 6 years old.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I mean, you realize that like the recruiting and the scout.com and all this stuff and now Huddle, like none of that existed. You couldn't do any of that stuff. So there was no rating scale. Like I think I got like, that was one of the first years they ever had like a star recruiting like level. And I was like a one star. And then everybody's a one star until you get an offer. Then you become a two star. And that's what I was. But I think, so I went to that camp and I kind of like put people on notice because I ran like super fast. I could throw the ball a little bit. I was a good, decent athlete. So then people started to notice me, got a few more letters, but then nothing until the end of my senior year. And that's when people started getting really interested. And that's when
Coach Morgan, Reese Morgan, he drove to my basketball game. I can remember we were playing Mitchell Christian in Mitchell in the Corn Palace. If you guys ever driven through Mitchell, South Dakota. And this is, I mean, this is a story that Reese Morgan tells all the time of like getting pulled over because he's going too fast between Sioux Falls and Mitchell. And him telling the cop that he was coming to watch me play and to recruit me, and he gets a police escort to the Corn Palace.
Wow.
So, like, it was, you know, when you're from, it's like small town Iowa, it's the same thing. Like, you're famous in a small town. And for me, like, I had done things athletically the other guys hadn't done. So people wanted to help me get to where, you know, they thought I could go. And, you know, as I mentioned, I went to that Iowa Northwestern game as my official visit. I ended up getting my only offer from Kirk Ferentz. So literally before the game, he's pulling on his pants, jock strap on, and he coached with a jock strap. Don't ask me how that happens or why he would do that.
That's just an old man thing. I think that's like, yeah.
But I'm an old man now. I don't wear a jock strap. I don't know what I do. But so he's pulling on his pants and he's like, literally, hey son, we're gonna have a chance for you to, you know, scholarship for you to come to Iowa. I'm like, you know, kind of like, you didn't even know like what happened. I thought he offered me, and like literally Coach Morgan's walking me out. He's like, you know, he just offered you a scholarship, right? I'm like, yeah, it sounded like that, but I've never done this before. I've never heard that from my mouth before.
That's wild.
And
sounds like the Paulsons.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks later, I go to Nebraska, which is where I wanted to go. Because when you grew up in South Dakota, like Nebraska was in their heyday in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody wanted to go there because we're only 2.5 hours from Lincoln. And I go to Nebraska and Frank Solich, and he gets the Southern draw, which I didn't know he was from the South. And maybe he just invented that for me. But he's like, son, you know, we're going to have an opportunity for you to walk on to the University of Nebraska. And I'm like a broke kid, you know, farm kid. I have no money. My parents don't have any money. Like, we're just like trying to figure it out. And I'm like, am I going to take a free education ride to Iowa or pay a bunch of money to go to Nebraska? And I was like, this is pretty easy. So I become a Hawkeye. And that's kind of the way it went.
So, Chad, I got one thing for you that really the only thing I really want to get out of this podcast. I don't know if you remember, but 2016, we're up in Minnesota, and Coach Wallace arranges for you to speak to the linebackers for a little bit. And I'll always remember this, and it really stuck with me. Is, you know, you talked about, you know, how some people think that fear is a bad motivation. You know, being afraid to fail is going to cause you to play, you know, tight or whatever. But you talked about how your fear of failure and fear of letting down your teammates was one of your biggest motivators. Can you talk about that from all the way back from South Dakota through Iowa, through Minnesota to where you're at now?
Yeah, I think fear, and you know, as a dude, right, as a football player, it's hard to talk about things like that. Cause like, but at the end of the day, like we're all scared. If you call it anxious or you call it nervous or whatever, but there's a fear there. And the fear started for me was like that letdown, like you talked about when I was going from Mount Vernon to Iowa, that fear of like letting down the state, letting down my family, letting down myself, right? That fear of like, I'm not good enough. Like, I got to go prove to myself and to the people of South Dakota, and like the parents that offered me a scholarship. So like, I can't let him down. And Doyle, like, and then like when you're at Iowa, like, I think that fear is a little different. Like, you got to hold your stick there, right? I mean, you got to be part of the squad. And if like you're not holding up your end of the bargain, like you said, it's like Doyle knows what I'm capable of doing. And if I'm not doing that, like, that fear was real for me. And I would just eat it up and like try to use it. And then that fear of failure in the NFL, like you're a first round pick, which is like this lifetime dream, you've realized it. And that fear like drove me hard every day to be like, I'm just not going to be that guy that say I was, you know, that I was going to be a bad first round pick, that I was going to be a bust. And then once I got past that, I was like, I'm not going to be this player that's going to like let people down after he got money. Right. And I'm going to be motivated by the fact that I'm not going to take my foot off the gas pedal because of that. And like this fear of like becoming somebody that I wasn't, like you're a small town kid from South Dakota, like just be that guy. Like, it's okay to be him. Like, don't change. And I think when I think about like my career and like my life in totality, like what's driven me probably the most over anything, and the fear that's driven me the most over anything beyond sport, is the fear of letting down my parents, my grandparents, that family name, right? My grandpa Greenway, who's still alive, my last grandparent alive, he's in his 80s. Like, just dude couldn't be like more of an American, right? Just works his ass off. He's a farmer. He's worked hard his entire life. And like, for me to go out and have this platform and to screw it up and to not like put a positive name forward for my grandpa's name, to me, like, motivated me beyond belief. And now my dad's passed. And so if your dads are still living, like, take advantage of this opportunity to be like, to create that great relationship. My dad was an amazing dude, my hero, my whole life. And to be able to always make him proud, and knowing that he passed away, being super proud of who I was and who I had become and the dad I was and the player I was, and more importantly, my character, like, that always, that fear of letting those guys down, like, always has been there. And now that fear just shifts, right? I'm a dad of four. And I always get this, like, four girls, like, what's the first question thing I get when we're having daughters? Like, oh, I bet you wish you would have had a son. I'm like, well, bullshit. My girls are badass, and like, they're gonna be
girl dad.
Yeah, and like, they're gonna be badasses in their own way, and I'm gonna just own that. And like, the fear of, like, you know, I don't want to let my wife down, I want to let my family down, I don't want to let, you know, I want to be able to call my mom and be like, have her be proud of me because the decisions I made, like, that fear over any other, like, football fear continues to motivate me every day. And like, I try to wake up every day to try and just get better at something. And, you know, if there's more people that would just be self-aware of what they're shitty at and be like, you know what, I'm just going to get better at that, and I'm going to own it, and I'm going to go out and just eat it up, like, get better that day, like, we'd all be better off of that.
If people were less of backboards and excuse makers and more of people who would just look in the mirror and be like, okay, you know what, I am shitty at that. I need, yeah. See, the world would be a better place.
And that's accountability.
Drake,
that's,
you know,
Mike Zimmer, like, I'll say one thing about, like, the NFL and coaches, like what makes Zim awesome and why I love playing for that guy is, and much like Ferentz and much like Doyle, it was the NFL version, is he didn't care. He does not care who you are, what your name is, or what you're capable of doing. If you do not hold up your end of the bargain, you will be called out in front of everybody on the football team, and you will be made an example of. And, like, I love that fear because it holds me accountable. I love having leadership that holds me accountable to that. And then now it makes me be a leader because, like, you know, like, my wife is – she's crazier than I am. So, like, can you imagine our girls? Like, she – like, our girls, like, they do something, like, we're jump their ass right away. Because it's, like, it's just not how you're going to live.
I love it.
You're going to pick up after yourself. You're going to clean your shit up. You're going to take care of your sisters. Like, this is how you're going to live. Like, there's only one way to do it. And if you don't do it that way, like – you're being shitty and you're letting yourself down. You're being lazy. This is how we do it. It's not perfect, but I feel like it gives us the best shot.
Greenway, man, I wish he was my dad. That's nothing against my dad, but I think if everybody maybe took a little something from that advice that Greenway just spat out there, I think the world would be a better place. And I think, you know, I would pay money to spend a whole lot more time with Chad and try and gain some wisdom from his career, everything that he's learned, and just the kind of guy that he is. He's a true Hawkeye, and an absolute legend. I mean, truly one of my heroes, and it was incredible to get to interview him. Now we go to one of our cooler guests that we've had on the show, Gary Dolphin. And we need to have Gary back on because this was before he even figured out how to video call. So the video portion of an interview with him would be incredible, but we got Gary shortly after we had on Chad, and Gary talks about Dolph talks about the Iowa team, the Iowa State game in 19 that had so many rain delays. He talks a little bit about Coach Doyle. He talks about a lot of things, and just listening to his voice, I mean, it's electric. He's the GOAT. And so here's a clip from Gary Dolphin.
I was never so impressed with an Iowa football team as I was in Ames last September through what we have, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours of delays. Yeah. I felt like Harry Carey at Wrigley Field in a rain delay. Well, Stoney, you know, let's fill another hour. And we finally went to the Kirk Ferentz show that week. But the student body, the Hawks had to walk right out in front of the student body. You guys been to
we remember.
Price, you know.
It's one of the best walks there is.
That is honestly the second best walk, right past, right behind Kinnick.
It was brutal. We could hear some of the slang and profanity being tossed. The player and Doyle was leading the pack, and every player was looking straight at Doyle's shaved head, and they didn't. Now, a lesser team, as you guys know, would turn and either flip the bird, or they'd mouth a nasty, and not. None of that. And you know Doyle had gotten their face before they exited the tunnel. And you know, that came from Ference too. And so they knew what to expect, so they handled it so well and professionally. And then obviously did their talking on the field, which I can tell you was very gratifying in the end.
And I don't know if you've ever heard this, but as we were driving in to Jack Trice, there were so many people flipping us off that there was from like the ages 6 years old all the way up to people in like wheelchairs with oxygen tanks.
Absolutely. And
everybody is just showing you both middle fingers. It's pretty sick. It's an enjoyable experience.
I think it speaks volumes for the rivalry itself. And hey, look, I'm not saying when the Cyclones roll up in front of Kinnick Stadium, there isn't some gesturing going on to them as well. But I don't know. Maybe it's just because we were there so early, and I've been to Ames many, many times and called mostly victories, I'm happy to say. But I don't ever remember it being that nasty as it was that day. And, you know, I think it speaks to what Matt Campbell has done. He's got that fan base fired up. But, you know, to me, you got to be respectful of your opponent.
Yeah.
To a certain degree. And unfortunately, it got out of hand early, and it was permeated throughout the afternoon. And then the rain delays and the lightning delays. I'm really shocked they got the game in. But as we left in the dark of night from Iowa State, and they were there early, as you remember, game day was there, I think, for the first time.
Yep.
But as long as the Hawks are on the right side of the scoreboard, I'm happy.
We're all happy when the Hawks are on the right side of the scoreboard. Gary, I mean, just listen to the man. Dolph's voice is absolutely incredible, and we need to have him back on because he has stories and stories for days. I remember Dolph used to come up to me at practice when he would stop by. You know, the snappers don't do anything. I tell you guys that all the time. And he would just pull out these random stories that somehow connected to my life or somebody that I knew that Dolph also knew, stories from the 80s, the 90s, random stuff. It's almost like Coach Ference as well. They pull these memories from deep in their mind, and it's still so crystal clear, and the way they tell it makes the story that much better. So Dolph was amazing, and we hope to have him on soon. This final clip is an ode to all of the Coach Ference impressions, all the coach impressions that we do, sometimes Coach Wallace, sometimes Coach Parker. There's too many to count, and it would have been extremely tough for me to go back and just listen to all the episodes where we just randomly give an impression. So the one that stuck out the most was, and the one that was most requested was the one where we were impersonating Coach Ference in a team meeting, talking about me post career sneaking into Duncan's room, Keith Duncan's room, I believe on the Holiday Bowl trip, and sleeping in the hotel with the team unannounced. So we'll close it down with this one. I'll give you a few words after, and we hope you enjoy.
But if they wouldn't pay for your wife, could we get Lauren to stay at home and you just stay on a pullout in Keith and Colton's room? And
for real?
And then
all I need is,
you know, all
I
you
can
need
probably
is a flight.
Yeah, because I can get a game ticket for free if it's just me.
For sure.
I'll hit up the guys. And
you'll
then
find one ticket down there for sure.
Right. And if not, I'll just contact Ben and be like,
guy, I'm here.
Guy.
All right.
I
we got to have a team meeting about this shit. Okay.
Oh, shit. All right.
You know, We're 2 days into this bull trip. I found out we got a goddamn guy who graduated 2 years ago living in the fucking rooms, okay? You know, do we know what's going on here? We came here to win a football game, okay? You know, you had your fun.
The fucking noise.
We gave you a fucking couple days to go run around and have fun and shit. And I found out you got this jackass who's doing a podcast living in one of the seniors' rooms, okay? How do we expect to win a bowl game with guys acting like this? All right? This is bullshit. You know, and that guy, he had his time, okay? He was a player for 5 years. He went to 5 bowl games, okay? He is not part of the team anymore. He should not be staying in your rooms, okay? And that's just bullshit.
I just want to bring something up quick, all right? We got a – hey, Kluver. You guys remember Kluver? All right, he graduated a couple years ago. I caught that fucking pass against Ohio State, all right?
Tripped over his own feet.
Could have scored, by the way. All right. All right. We find out he's living in Keystone. He's bunking in Dunk's room. All right. And I don't know. I must have missed the team meeting where I said it was okay to have other people staying in your room. But I don't give a fuck if it's Donald Trump. All right. We're not letting anybody in our room except for our team and our staff. Okay.
And that's just one of the many times that we've quoted Coach Ferentz. It doesn't even sound good to me anymore. I think I do maybe a slightly better impression every time I work on it, but that always provides good entertainment. You guys love that stuff, and we love doing it. Coach Ferentz is the GOAT, and there's just no debate. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Almost an hour worth of content, a look back, a blast from the past. We'll do more of these in the future when we get some. Notice a lot of these are actually before episode 100, so there's a whole lot of episodes that we didn't even include in this, and I need to do a better job of marking down places where we might use clips later on. But we hope you enjoyed this. We have a big time guest, big time, maybe Super Bowl champion, big time, coming on Thursday. So hopefully you guys stick around and listen to that one. It is an electric show, and we will be back soon with 200. This is 197, and there's not many numbers left in between that big 200. So thank you guys, as always, for listening to the show. We hope you have a fantastic week. We will talk to you on Thursday. Have a great time. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.